I'm talking to Lynn Ferney. Lynn is one of the filmmakers of Forbidden Love, which is a new NFB film about lesbian life in the 50s and 60s. And Lynn has an interesting history herself. She's an intermedia artist, which means that she's worked in a lot of different mediums. And she edits an art magazine in Toronto called Parallelogram. Your information says that you got fascinated by this story when you were researching international lesbian history. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, even before that, because I've curated exhibitions of lesbian art shows in Toronto, and we made a publication. But more recently, I was doing some research for international lesbian history film. And while I was doing it, I ran across quite a bit of oral histories coming out of the States and England, not so many coming out of Canada. There is a group in Toronto that's been doing some incredible work called Lesbians Making History, and I met with them and started reading some of their stories. And the more that I worked on it, the more I would thought that a film about lesbians in Canada in the 50s would be amazing. I should say that the more that Erilyn Weissman, a co-director, and I worked on the project together.
So how did you bring this project to the NFB? I'm really curious. Did you, I mean, you said, oh, how great. But a lot of us think, you know, oh, how great, it would be great to have a film about this, but no one does anything. So what was that process like?
It was just kind of like good lesbian karma. I had been working with Jenny Steichman, who's now the executive producer of Studio D, and she had been involved in this other project. And the other project wasn't being carried on by the studio at that time, and I guess about 6 or 8 months afterwards, the studio wanted to do a film on lesbian history. And that's how basically Erilyn and I got involved, through Ginny, the connection with Ginny, and the executive producer at that time, who was Rina Fraticelli. Wow. Actually had the courage to program it.
Was this a new thing for the NFB, getting a film explicitly on lesbians' history?
Absolutely. I mean, the film board, when we looked at their 50th anniversary catalog, there wasn't even a section on homosexuality or lesbianism or anything like that. And that was, what, last year, the year before, a couple of years ago? So it was a new thing. I mean, in some ways, I think sexual history, gay and lesbian history, is kind of, in a way, but like a really recent frontier. I mean, we've had an incredibly censored history.
My question is why?
Bigotry, conservatism, it's complete and utter homophobia and prejudice.
Did you run into any of that yourself?
In my life or in the film?
Well.
We actually had an excellent, excellent experience doing this film in the main. With some things, but I must say that we were also very cautious, because we know that it is a homophobic society. And Erilyn and I, really did not want to publicize this film until we had shot it, until it was in the can and it was firmly on the editing, on the road to being finished editorially. Because we were just very nervous. Not that anyone at the film board tried to censor us or anything like that, but we were a little bit worried about caused a great big kerfuffle at Parliament. So we thought we would be fairly quiet about it, just in case anybody was running around trying to get votes.
Yeah. So this was basically the first time that the NFB had done something with lesbian content, not with lesbian content, because I think there was some lesbian content in Five Feminist Minutes.
Yes, there was. And there are little bits. I think there's a film, and I just forget the name of it now, on Pat Schultz, that also, who was an amazing woman, and there was a film made about her, and she was a daycare activist and so forth. And they also bring up issues of sexuality and lesbianism in the film. But it isn't in the subject catalog, so you would have a really hard time finding it.
Right, right. What about within the wider film community. I mean, I know that lesbians have a history of making a lot of independent films and getting out their cameras. Is there, but within the wider film community, is there a lot of homophobia? Do you encounter a lot of that? Why did you choose to go to the NFB instead of doing this privately, for example?
Well, with us, it worked out that way because it wasn't even a matter of a choice at that point. It was just the way we had been working and who we'd been working with and being asked to submit a proposal. So it just sort of came out that way. I know a lot of lesbian media artists, video particularly, and film artists who have been making films and videos for a number of years. With what we were really lucky with making the film with Studio D was that we actually could get the production values together. It would not have been this film without Studio D funding, because we wouldn't have been able to shoot women in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. We wouldn't have been able, perhaps, to do the drama quite this way. I'm not sure that we could have raised this kind of money 4 or 5 years ago to do a feature-length film.
Was it completely funded by the NFB?
Mm-hmm. By Studio D.
Okay.
By the feminist studio, by the women's studio.
Did you have any...
To their credit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's wonderful.
Really. Did you have any trouble, another question that occurs to me, did you have any trouble finding actors who were willing to take on the roles? For viewers who may not have seen this movie yet, there's a melodrama, I'd call it, between two women, one who goes to the big city and sort of discovers her lesbianism through her first lesbian lover. Did you have any problem finding actors who were willing to take on that role?
No, for the drama aspects, we in fact auditioned in Montreal. We shot them here. In Montreal and on the soundstage at the Film Board, we held auditions and cast the actresses. We were very clear with the actresses, but in fact, the actresses in the film and other people who auditioned really loved the idea of the documentary, and they felt that the dramas would be really interesting to act in. When we asked them, because there is a sex scene in the film, as you know, asked them about, and I would do this, whether it was, like lesbian or straight or whatever, when we told them there was a specific sex scene and asked them how they felt about it, because we wanted to make sure nobody was going to have any after-the-fact reactions, one of the actresses said, look, this sounds like a really exciting project, and I'm delighted to do it, and it's part of the project, and it's why these women took the risks they did. What I hate is doing a sex scene and then just getting murdered in a shower next day. So, I mean, I think that there was a context there, and actresses were interested
really
in it.
Yeah. I was watching this film, and I was, I left the theater with a really... didn't notice until later that this is one of the rare films that I felt spoke to me as a lesbian, instead of sort of maybe speaking to me and to a straight audience, or sort of explaining and categorizing our sexuality at the same time as bringing in this history. And so I was surprised that, that made the film feel very natural to me, and made me feel very, included. And I wanted to know if you did that explicitly and consciously, and if you have any qualms about whether you're going to bring in a straight audience because of that focus.
No. We did it absolutely specifically. The difference between making a film for some mythical notion of the general public, it means that you censor your history. It means that you're doing all kinds of imaginary whitewashing. And we weren't interested in doing that. We primarily thought of a lesbian and gay audience for this film. And we made the history that we felt we wanted to know. The good parts, the empowered parts, and the hard parts. There's some tough moments in the film, as you know. But when you do that, you get a living document. It's not didactic. And you can sort of embed those issues, and you don't have to try and explain it for somebody in quite the same way. It makes a film that everyone wants to see because it's alive. It's not censored in quite the same way. I mean, it's edited, obviously, but it's not censored. So we did it absolutely. I mean, it was our politic to do it this way. I'm delighted if straight people, and they should come and see the film, because One of the things is that not only gay and lesbian history has been censored, it has been, our lives as well as our history, but there's an awful lot of censored histories in Canada. And you don't even begin to get over either racism or bigotry or homophobia unless self-created projects are out there. I mean, you just can't deal with an absence or the horrible stereotypes that stand in for absences, you know, that stand in for actual self-made film.
Yeah.
Film and video and books and so forth. So we did that absolutely on purpose. That was the politics of this making this film.
That's amazing. What about the women who appeared in the film? How did you pick them? The women who, not the women who were acting, but the women who told their stories for the camera. They're a really diverse group, really delightful. And I want to know how you sort of narrowed that down.
Well, we talked with over 40 women. We did sort of research interviews with over 40 women just on tape, on audio tape. And it was amazing. We could have kept on going forever. I mean, so we talked to people and they would say, oh, you've got to talk to my friend Caroline and her friend Bill, you know, I mean, all this kind of stuff. And we could have kept on going, but we had to stop at some point or we never would have made the film. The women in the film all really wanted to tell their stories. They particularly wanted to communicate with younger lesbians so they'd know that they'd know some history. And they'd know about the tough parts, and they'd know about the romantic parts, and you'd learn about butch femme from quite different points of view, as it was lived in bar culture. But there were a number of women we asked to be in the film who couldn't be in the film.
Really?
They had jobs that were still at risk. They were either working in social work or still teaching. And so
yeah.
It's quite amazing because I think the women in the film are really candid with us and with their stories, and really courageous. And it still takes a lot of courage to be in a film that might be on television and your next door neighbor might see it. So we basically, well, we wanted people from different regions and we wanted to be able to deal with that bar history. And the women told really meaningful, wonderful stories that we all felt we should hear.
Yeah.
So it was hard. I mean, it definitely... I mean, if you're going to stay within the bar genre, for instance, you could choose one bar and choose eight people who hung out with each other in that one bar and, like, construct an amazing film with very detailed histories.
You had a lot of stuff to work from.
Yeah. We found a wealth of history.
Yeah. I was particularly struck by some of the archival stuff that you had. I mean, those lurid lesbian pulp novels with their really racist or really sexist covers. Those newspaper articles about the homo threat, don't let your kids go out alone. Where did you dig that stuff up? How do you get a hold of that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, we had a lot of help with the tabloid stuff from some gay and lesbian history researchers who've been doing work in that area in Montreal and in Toronto. And so they were really wonderful about letting us look at their archives and providing us with material. Also the Toronto, I guess it's the call, it's not, it's in Toronto, but it's the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Archives, have just filing boxes full of clippings. So we spent a lot of time in there. But, you know, for all our listeners that want to do some lesbian history and it becomes like a mystery project when you're doing it. There are archives that you can access that are surprising. We found the photographs of the bars through the Liquor Control Board archives. Because as you know, a lot of the bars and beer parlors had to be photographed in order to get a license.
Wow.
So we did that. We found a lot of stuff at the National Film Board and the CBC Stock Shots Library. And the books, there's a wonderful woman named Ruth Dworn in Toronto who has over 400 of those books. She's been collecting them. And so we got access to her publication. I mean, once you start looking, it's amazing. But for sure, it's often in popular or trash culture where what is censored in, you know, what you didn't see on the sort of mainstream culture of the time. That's where you could sort of find criminal records. If we could get into the cop records, what an archive we would find.
I was particularly struck by the sex scene in your film, and I was wondering, I mean, in a way, I really liked it, and I was quite amazed that it went as far as it did. But in a way, I wondered why it didn't go further. I mean, it seemed to be straddling some line that I'm not quite sure. But can you explain why you put the sex scene at the end, and why you played it the way you did?
Well, we put it just a cheap trick to make you watch all the movie. No, no, seriously, we actually did a sex scene because a whole bunch of reasons. But one of them
was standard NFB fare, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons was that these women are telling stories about going into some very dangerous territories and taking a lot of risks and facing being beaten up by the cops and going to really tough, seedy places. And they went there because they wanted to make love with other women. And so we really wanted women making love in the film. And we obviously weren't going to ask people in the documentary. And it fit in, you know, with
I can suggest
harder
a few
to cast
good candidates.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure you can. I should tell you listeners that the announcer here has been trying to bribe me for phone numbers. I just said, well, you know, everyone has a price, but so we did it for that reason. It's at the end because it works well at the end. I mean, it's a way the narrative unfolds, and it, you know, I mean, it, and you're going to all run home now, and no, but it was we took some care with it. We took care with all the dramas and how we were going to interweave them with the documentary section.
Yeah,
we didn't go further with it because we're talking about a sensibility of the film, and so I think of this film that was in the 50s, of the pulp novels, and it would have been really strange, I think, to all of a sudden, like, burst into 90s SM sex or something. It just wouldn't have made any sense to the film at all. I mean, I'd love to work on stuff, on projects like that, but so we thought,
I mean,
the whole notion was, I mean, its aesthetic is moving from the sort of pulp novels, so it's popular culture and melodrama and when we had to work, we worked very much with cliche and stereotype and tried to hijack it to our purposes. Because, you know, if you've read those novels, most of them have terrible endings. Like, one of the lesbians goes back to her husband and the other one, I don't know, either kills herself or goes off and, you know, and lives alone for the rest of her life. So we wanted lesbian viewers to have the same pleasure that heterosexuals just take for granted in almost every film they see.
Yeah.
So, you know, and plus we had fun doing it.
Lynn, what do you see as the future of the film? Do you have plans for this film after this festival?
Well, the film board's been great. Publicity and marketing people are really... In fact, we've had really good experiences with the film board, I should say. And I want to mention our producer who saw us through 3 years and wore out 3 pairs of sneakers running around those hallways, Margaret Pettigrew, to whom we owe... We just couldn't have finished it without her. But we are hoping to do some more festivals and then do a limited theatrical release so that hopefully Forbidden Love will be coming to a movie house near you sometime in February or March in Canada. And we have a number of distributors in the States who are interested in distributing it in the States. So we would like to get it everywhere we can. I mean, we'd like to get it on, certainly on television too. Like to reach women that aren't connected with the community and just turn their TV on at 11 o'clock one night and say, my God, there's my life on television.
That's wonderful.
So I hope that we can. I think the film has a long life. Yeah. I hope.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much for being on the air. This is Dykes on Mics for CKUT. And I'm Carolyn Brooks. Thanks.
Thank you, Carolyn.